Good morning, everyone. So that rather strange music we were just hearing, this is Sunil's depiction of that, what we read in the first canto, the first section of Canto 3, Savitri, entering into the subconscious levels of the body, where there's a swarm with elemental entities all pushing for their own satisfaction. And she has to hold herself free from that. He gave this description of a being like caught in a crowd, you know, as if one driven mid a trampling, hurrying crowd, hour after hour she trod without release, holding by her will the senseless mute at bay. So did we read to the end of the first section? No, where did we stop?
Here in line 494.
On page 494, yeah. That's where we stopped.
Which page is
it? 494. But we are still just reading through the canto. That's where we reached in our reading. We haven't started our detailed study yet. It's quite a large, a long canto with the different challenges that Savitri has to face. So I think we'll begin by reading to the end of the canto. So we're continuing from page 494, line 219. Savitri is entering into her own inner being in search of the soul. It's interesting that she has been told that because her mission is not for herself alone, but for the whole of humanity, she has to find her soul in the material body. It's a different... Well done, Bom. It's a different tapasya from that of King Aswapati, who was able to detach himself, rise very high, explore many, many different levels of consciousness. She has to go into the material body and find the divine essence there. So the first entry is rather difficult. She has to press in. There's a kind of door, there's a threat, and she comes into a very stifling, narrow atmosphere, dominated by the senses who actually want to be free of the control of mind. They think that if they can be free of that domination, control of mind, then they will be able to experience to the full. But Sri Aurobindo says, that is not the case. If mind is thrown away into the gutter, then there's no consciousness anymore in the body. And the individual to whom that happens may be whirled along by a mad disorder. So she manages by calling on the name, the Savior name, to free herself from that crowded press of the senses. And for a moment, there's a time of peace, of emptiness. But then, like a great tsunami, comes the life force in full force, a giant head of life, ungoverned by my mind or soul, subconscious, vast. And here this is a very, very powerful wave of force. It's like a flood coming. And we read through, not in detail, but a little bit, what that wave is aiming at, what it wants. So we'll continue from there. We read on this side last week. Patty, will you begin?
Here in life's nether realms, all contrary is me. Truth stares and does her works with bandaged eyes, and ignorance is wisdom's patron here. Those galloping hooves, in their enthusiast speed, could bear to a dangerous intermediate zone, where death walks wearing a robe of deathless light, or they enter the valley of the wandering gleam, whence captives or victims of the specious ray, souls trapped in that region never can escape. Agents, not masters, they serve life's desires, toiling forever in the snare of time. Their bodies born out of some nihil's womb, ensnare the spirit in the moment's dreams, then perish, vomiting the immortal soul out of matter's belly in the sink of naught. Yet some uncaught, unslain, can warily pass, carrying truth's image in the sheltered heart. Pluck knowledge out of error's screening grip, break past through the blind walls of little self, then travel on to reach a greater life. All this stream passed her and seemed to her vision sight, as if around the high and voiceless isle, a clamor of waters from far unknown hills swallowed its narrow banks in crowding waves and made a hungry world of white, wild foam. Hastening, a dragon with a million feet, its foam and cry a drunken giant's din, tossing a mane of darkness into God's sky. It ebbed receding into a distant war. Then smiled again a large and tranquil air. Blue heaven, green earth, partners of beauty's reign, lived as of old, companions in happiness, and in the world's heart laughed the joy of life. All now was still, the soil shone dry and pure. Through it all, she moved not, plunged not in the vain waves. Out of the vastness of the silent self, life's clamor fled. Her spirit was mute and free.
Thank you. Patricia?
Then journeying forward through the self's wide hush, she came into a brilliant, ordered space. There life dwelt parked in an armed tranquility. A chain was on her strong insurgent heart. Tamed to the modesty of a measured pace, she kept no more her vehement stride and rush. She had lost the careless majesty of her muse and the ample grandeur of her regal force. Curved were her mighty pomps, her splendid waist, sobered the revels of her Bacchant play. Cut down were her squanderings and desires bizarre. Coerced her desperate will, her fancy's dance, a cold stolidity bound the right of sense. A royalty without freedom was her lot. The sovereign throned, obeyed her ministers. Her servants, mind and sense, governed her house. Her spirit's bounds they cast in rigid lines, and guarding with the phalanx of almond rules the reason's balanced reign, kept order and peace. Her will lived closed in adamant walls of war. Coerced was her force by chains that feigned to adore. Imagination was prisoned in a fort. Her wanton and licentious failed. Reality's poise and reason's symmetry were set in its place, sentineled by marshaled facts. They gave to the soul, for throne, a bench of law. For kingdom, a small world of rule and mind. The age's wisdom, shriveled to scholiast lines, shrank, patterned into a copybook device.
Thank you. Mila.
The spirit's almighty freedom was not here. A schoolman mind had captured life's dark space, but chose to live in the hampered dream, apart from the too vast boundless universe, fearing to lose its soul in the infinite. Even the idea's swept sweep was cut into a system, chained to fixed pillars of thought, or riveted to matter's solid ground, or else the soul was lost in its own heights, obeying the idea's high road law, thought based a throne on unsubstantial air, thus disdaining Earth's flat triviality. It bears reality out to live in its dreams, or all stepped into a system universe. Light's empire was a managed continent, its thoughts an army ranked and disciplined. Uniform, they kept the logic of the fixed place, a dividing beating of the trained centurion mind. For each step into its station like a star, or march through fixed and constellated heavens, or kept its feudal rank among its peers in the sky's unchanging cosmic hierarchy, or like a high-bred maiden with chaste eyes, forbidden to walk on vain the public ways. She must in close, secluded chambers move, her feeling in cloisters leave or garden paths.
Thank you. Paula.
Life was consigned to a safe, level path. It dared not tempt the great and difficult heights, or climb to be neighbor to a lonely star, or skirt the danger of the precipice, or tempt the foam-curled breaker's perilous laugh. Adventure's lyrist, danger's amateur, or into her chamber call some flaming god, or leave the world's bounds, and where no limits are, meet with the heart's passion, the adorable, or set the world ablaze with the inner fire. A chastened epitaph in the prose of life, she must fill with color just her sanctioned space, not break out of the cabin of the idea, nor trespass into rhythms too high or vast. Even when it soared into ideal air, thought's flight lost not itself in heaven's blue. It drew upon the skies a patterned flower of disciplined beauty and harmonic light. A temperate, vigilant spirit governed life. Its acts were tools of the considering thought, too cold to take fire and set the world ablaze, or the careful reason's diplomatic moves, testing the means to a prefigured end, or at the highest pitch, some calm will's plan, or a strategy of some high command within, to conquer the secret treasures of the gods, or win for a masked king some glorious world, not a reflex of the spontaneous self, an index of the being and its moods, a winging of conspirit, a sacrament of life's communion with the still supreme, or its pure movement on the eternal's road, or else for the body of some high ideal. A house was built with two close-fitting bricks. Action and thought cemented, made a wall of small ideals limiting the soul.
Thank you. Rosa. No? You will read, please, Prasheed. Line 347, even meditation.
Even meditation mews on a narrow seat and worship turns to an exclusive court to the universal in the chapel prayer, whose doors were shut against the universe or kneeled to the bodiless impersonal, a mind shut to the cry and fire of love. A rational religion drives the heart. It plans its moves, life acts with ethics rules. Or offers the cold and flameless sacrifice. The sacred book lay on its sanctified desk, reputation, silk and string. A credo sealed up its spiritual sense. Here was a quiet country of fixed mind. Here life no more was still, nor passion's voice. The cry of sense had sunk into a hush. Soul was not there, nor spirit, but mind alone. Mind claimed to be the spirit and the soul. The spirit saw itself as a form of mind, lost itself in the glory of the thought, a light that made visible the sun. Into a firm and settled space she came, where all was still and all things kept their place. Each found what it had sought and knew its aim. All had a final last stability.
Thank you. Audrey.
There one stood forth who bore authority on an important brow and held the glory. Command was incarnate in his gesture and tone. Traditions petrified, wisdom carved his speech. His sentences savored the oracle. Traveler or pilgrim of the inner world, fortunate art thou to reach our brilliant air, flaming with thought's supreme finality. O aspirant to the perfect way of life, here find it, rest and search, and live with peace. Ours is the home of cosmic certainty. Here is the truth. God's harmony is here. Register thy name in the book of the Ude, admitted by the sanction of the few. Adopt thy station of knowledge, thy post in mind, thy ticket of order draw in life's bureau, and praise thy fate that made thee one of ours. All here, docketed and tied, the mind can know, all schemed by law that God permits to life. This is the end, and there is no beyond. Here is the safety of the ultimate war. Here is the clarity of the sword of life. Here is the victory of a single truth. Here burns the diamond of flawless bliss, a favorite of heaven and nature with.
Thank you. Te Keste, you will read? No? Jean-Yves?
But to the too satisfied and confident sage, Savitri replied, casting into his world, sighs deep release, the heart's questioning inner voice. For here the heart spoke not, only clear daylight of intellect reigned free, liberty, cold, precise. Happy are they, who in this chaos of things, this coming and going of the feet of time, can find the center truth, the eternal law. And touch the lead by hope and doubt and fear. Happy are men anchored on fixed belief in this uncertain and ambiguous world, or who have planted in the heart-rich soil one small grain of spiritual certitude. Happy us to stand in faith as on rock, but I must pass. Giving the end its search. Truth's rounded out confirmed, immutable, and this harmonic building of world fact, this ordered knowledge of apparent things, here I can say not, for I seek my soul. None answered in that bright contented world, or only turned on the accustomed way, astonished to hear questioning in that air, or thoughts that could still turn to the beyond.
Thank you. Nihon.
But some mama passes by from kindred spheres, which by his credit judged the thought she spoke. Who then is this? Who knows not that the soul is a least gland or a secretion's fault? Disquieting the same government of the mind, disordering the function of the brain, or a yawning lodged in nature's mortal house, or being whispered in men's cave of hollow thought, who would prolong his brief unhappy term, or cling to living in a sea of death. But others, nay, it is her speed she seeks, a splendid shadow of the name of God, a formless luster from the ideal's realm. The speed is the Holy Ghost of mind, but none has touched its limbs or seen its face. Each soul is the great Father's crucified son. Mind is that soul's one parent, its conscious cause. The ground on which trembles a brief passing light. Mind, soul creator of the apparent world. All that is here is a part of our own self. Our minds have made the world in which we live. Another with mystic and unsatisfied eyes, who loved his slain belief and mourned its death. Is there one left who seeks for a beyond? Can still the path be found? Open the gate?
Thank you. Helmut.
So she fared on across her silent self,
to a roger came thronged with an ardent crowd, respect brilliant, fire-footed, sunlight-eyed, pressing to reach the world's mysterious walls and pass through masked doorways into outer mind, where the light comes not, nor the mystic voice, messengers from our subliminal greatnesses, guests from the cavern of the secret soul. Into dim spiritual somnolence they break, or shed white wonder on our waking self, ideas that haunt us with their radiant tread, dreams that are hints of unborn reality, strange goddesses with deep cooled magic eyes, strong wind-haired gods carrying the hearts of hope, great moon-hued visions gliding through gold air, aspirations sun-dream of head and star carved winds, emotions making common hearts sublime. And Savitri mingled in that glorious crowd, yearning to the spiritual light they hold, longs to hasten like them to save God's world. But she reined back the high passion in her heart. She knew that first she must discover her soul. Only who save themselves can others save. In contrary sense, she faced life's riddling truth. They carrying the light to suffering men, hurried with eager feet to the outer world. Her eyes were turned towards the eternal source.
Thank you.
Outstretching her hand to stay the throne, she cried, "Oh, happy companion of Moonless God, revealer, you know the words of endless train. For surely that light altered is your form. Find the birthplace of the occult fire and the deep mention of my secret soul. One answer pointing to a silence dim on a remote extremity of sleep in some far background of the inner world. Oh, Savitri, from that hidden soul you came. You are the messengers, the occult gods, help man's drive and heavy ignorant life to wake to the beauty and the wonder of things, touching them with glory and beauty. In evil we light the deathless flame of good and hold the thought of knowledge upon ignorant souls. We are thy will and all men's will towards life. Oh, human copy and disguise of God, who seeks to the blessing thou keepest here, and leadest by the truth thou hast not known. Show the world's winding highway to its source. There, in the silence, few have ever reached. Thou shalt see the fire burning on the bare stone and the deep cavern of thy secret soul. Then, Savitri, following the great winding road, came there, came well, she kindled into a narrow path, trod only by rare wounded creeping feet. A few bright forms emerged from unknown depths and looked at her with calm, immortal eyes. There was no sound
heard his wounded flesh. One felt the silent music.
So we can go back to the beginning and follow step by step these inner countries, a whole series of them, from the subconscious, subtle physical, the world of the senses, the realm of the unillumined life, and then life under the domination of reason, under the control of mind and will, and then the world of mind itself, self-satisfied mind, and then deeper transitional country where Savitri meets the impulses coming from the spirit and soul within and pressing towards the outer world. They tell her the way she has to follow. She follows it and comes to a place where one can feel the nearness of the soul. So, Margaret, you read.
The entry into the inner countries, at first out of the busy hum of mind, as if from a loud, strong market into a cave, by an inward moment's magic she had come. A star-hushed emptiness became herself. Her mind, unvisited by the voice of thought, stared at a void, deep stump infinity. Her heights receded, her depths behind her closed. All fled away from her and left her blank. But when she came back to herself of thought, once more she was a human thing on earth, a lump of matter, a house of closed sight, a mind compelled to think out ignorance, a life force pressed into a camp of works and the material world for a limiting field.
Thank you. In the previous canto, we read how Savitri was given the high command from above to find her soul, and she sat down to try and do that, or she remained sitting. She had that when the voice came, she was in a trance of stillness, listening stillness. And the first stage we saw was that she is given this dream or vision which reveals to her the whole evolutionary process of the self from the beginning of the universe up to this point where she is. And along with this and the development of man and what man represents in the evolutionary process, and where she is in this progression, and what her next step must be. And that is, she realizes that she has a mission, she has to do something, she has to find her soul, and she sees that the outer nature is still taking up too big a place in her consciousness, and she has to put it aside in order to find her soul. So that's what she tries to do. And the first experience is that out of this busy hum of mind, of the surface mind, she enters into a stark, hushed emptiness. It's as if she's come out of a market into a cave by some magic. The mind has fallen silent, her mind unvisited by the voice of thought, stared at a void, deeps, dumb infinity, a great emptiness, which seems to be infinite, empty. Whatever higher levels of her being she had been aware of, this withdraws away. Whatever deeper levels, they close up. Everything fled away from her and left her blank, feeling of blankness. We might have experienced something like this when we try to concentrate. And then when she came back, when the mind wakes up again, she comes back to herself of thought, she finds herself just as she was before, a human thing on earth, a lump of matter, a house of closed sight, unable to see into the subtle depths. The mind is there. What can it do? It can only think out ignorance. Do you like to join us? There's a chair here. Or there's a chair here. We're on page 408. That's what the description of what we are. A lump of matter. A house of closed sight. A mind compelled to think out ignorance. We find it even very difficult to stop this mind from continually thinking out in the ignorance. And we've got this life force, and it's pressed into this camp, this field of action, of activity, of works. And the material world is our limiting field. So she feels herself in that very human state that we can recognize.
What touches me here is that when we think, no, then we feel ourselves or recognize ourselves as a lump of matter. That is,
yes. That's what we're mostly aware of, no, this lump of matter. Of course, it's living matter. It's not matter like metal or rock. But we have to deal with this lump of matter and its needs. And then there is the mind. We become aware of the mind, but the field of the mind is quite limited. And the life force also, because we are all limited, this whole being is limited by the domination of matter. We're living here in the physical universe. So I'll read on from there, no? Line 15. Amazed, like one unknowing, she sought her way out of the tangle of man's ignorant past that took the surface person for the soul. Then a voice spoke that dwelt on secret heights. For man thou seekst, not for thyself alone. Only if God assumes the human mind and puts on mortal ignorance for his cloak, and makes himself the dwarf with triple stride, can he help man to grow into the God? As man disguised, the cosmic greatness works, and finds the mystic inaccessible gate and opens the immortal's golden door. Man, human, follows in God's human steps. accepting his darkness, thou must bring to him light. Accepting his sorrow, thou must bring to him bliss. In matter's body, find thy heaven-born soul. Earlier the voice had told her, remember why thou camest. And we said that we can take this message for ourselves. I think we can also take these lines for ourselves. Of course, the voice is addressing Savitri as an incarnation of the Supreme Divine Mother. But in a way, Sri Aurobindo has told us, each one of us is an avatar. Within each of us, there is the divine soul waiting to be found. And when it's found, it can rule the nature and contribute to the evolutionary process. So when we are seeking for ourselves, but our seeking is also for man. We are seeking on behalf of humanity, all these efforts that we make. And it can only work like this, if the divine puts on this human mind, cloaks himself in mortal ignorance, and makes himself the dwarf with triple stride, can he help man to grow into the God?
So we are the dwarf.
The avatar is the dwarf. It's one of the stories of the avatars. No? The 10 avatars. I think the first one is the fish, and then there's the boar. The tortoise. Oh, that's the first one is the tortoise.
No, fish, the turtle.
And then the tortoise, who's an amphibian. And then the boar, who rescues the earth. And then the man-lion. And then comes the dwarf. And then come the human form, their avatars in human form. Parashurama, Rama, Buddha, and Krishna. So this dwarf with triple stride, it's a very nice story, a symbolic story, how the Lord comes disguised as a little man, not yet a full-grown man, but dressed as a Brahmin. He comes to the king Shibirama-rana, who was trying really to be a good king, a noble king. And of course those kings, if somebody came, particularly if a Brahmin came and asked for a gift, he had to give it. So the little fellow says, please give me enough space that I can take 3 steps. So of course the king thought this was a very, very modest demand, because he's such a little fellow with such short legs. What kind of steps can he take? But this is the dwarf with triple stride. So with the first step, he conquers the earth. And with the second step, he conquers the heavens, the mind, the higher levels of consciousness. And then he says to the king, and now where can I take my 3rd step? And the king bows his head and said, please put your foot here. He surrenders to him. So it's a beautiful story. And this is a symbol of, what Sri Aurobindo is saying here. God comes, involves himself. He might appear as this small, deformed creature that we all are in a way. Perhaps we have to conquer the physical world first, and then we have to conquer the subtle worlds, the higher worlds. And finally, we have to surrender to the Supreme. So God does that in all of us. And it's by following this process that he can help us all to carry it forward. As man disguised, the cosmic greatness works. The universal spirit, the one who has brought all this into existence, works disguised as us. And in this disguise, he has forgotten who he is. There's a beautiful sentence in Book 1, Canto 4. And it says, as one forgetting, he seeks for himself. So in all of us, as one forgetting, he is seeking for himself. And to the extent that we can find ourselves, if we can find this mystic, inaccessible gate, if we can open the golden door to immortality, then we lead the way for other human beings to follow. Man, human, follows in God's human steps. And particularly this is true as Savitri, who is an emanation of the Supreme Conscious Force, who has come with this mission, to accept the darkness of humanity in order to bring light, accepting the suffering of humanity. You have to bring bliss. So now your task is to find your heaven-born soul, your divine individuality within the material body, within this physical form that you've taken on. And that process is what will be discovered and revealed in the rest of the book, the Book of Yoga. Shall we go on? Bon?
Stood on the first part outside the hostel and looked into her subterranean depth. And in each heart, as in a waterfall, to bind her sacred and mysterious soul at the dim portal of the inner life that bows up from our depths the body's mind and all that lies outside the body's breath. She knocked and pressed against the unknown heavenly gate. The living portal formed with the solemn hinge. The living reluctance is covered in art against the surrounding of the sweet touch. A formidable voice cries from within, that creator of all, rest, torture, and torn soul down.
Thank you. In this process, it's very, very helpful if you can have an out-of-the-body experience, however it comes. Because that gives you a decisive realization of how the inner being is separate from the outer one. So that is what happens next. Savitri in her subtle body, in her consciousness, surged out of this physical, material body and stood a little way outside herself. And looking then at the body, she could see where in the very heart of it, like in the bud of a lotus, there her soul is living. So she has a sense of where she has to aim for. What is the way she has to go? She doesn't really see it. She divines it. She can kind of sense it, feel where it is. And then it's as if there's a door, a dim portal, a door or a gate that is the entrance into the inner life. It's barring out our physical mind, the body's mind, from our deeper parts. It's keeping out everything in us that lives only by the body's breath, the physical prana. So So with her consciousness, with her will, she knocks at that gate and presses. It's an ebony gate, absolutely black, heavy. But it seems to have a life, a subtle life. It doesn't want to open. The living portal groaned with sullen hinge. The hinges don't open easily, but it does start to move. Heavily reluctant, it complained, inert. It doesn't want to respond, no, to the tyranny, the mastery of her spirit's touch, which is pressing, which wants to enter. And there's even a warning. I think when we try to go into our depths, very often there's a warning. There's a sense of fear that prevents us or delays us. There's this warning, back, creature of earth, lest tortured and torn thou die. So that warning is to our material being, that you can't come here. It's dangerous for you to come here. But the consciousness can enter. And there are forces within that are opposing this entry. The ego is what... I don't know whether that's what it is.
Yeah, ego doesn't want to die.
Yes, that's it's the ego that fears.
Fear, yeah.
Yes, it's the ego that fears. Yes, yes, exactly. That heeds the warning. Yes, but Savitri is not going to heed the warning. But it's quite that warning comes in quite a fearful form. Alice, you would read. Line 45.
Okay. Oh, a dreadful murmur rose like a dim sea. The serpent of the threshold hissing rose. A fatal guardian hood with monstrous coils. The hounds of darkness growled with jaws agape. And trolls and gnomes and goblins scowled and stared. And wild beast roarings thrilled the blood with fear. And menace muttered in a dangerous tongue. Unshaken, her will pressed on the rigid bars. The gate swung wide with a protesting jar. The opponent powers withdrew their dreadful guards. Her being entered into the inner worlds.
Yeah, thank you. It's quite clear and quite vivid. Hmm? Do you like to read? No. No. Okay. Lorraine?
Okay.
In a narrow passage.
In a narrow passage, as the conscience gate, she breathed with difficulty and pain, and struggled to find the inner self concealed in sense. Into a dense of subtle matter packed, a cavity filled with a blind mass of power, an opposition, a misleading dream. A heavy barrier of unseen sight, she forced her way through body to the soul. Across a perilous border line, she passed, where life dips into the subconscious dust, where struggles the matter into chaos of mind, a swarm of elemental entities. And fluttering shapes, a vague half-bodied thought, and crude beginnings of inconscient
force. At first, a difficult narrowness was there, a press of uncertain powers and drifting wills. For all was there, but nothing in its place. At times, an opening came. A door was forced. She crossed through spaces of a secret self and trod in passages of inner time.
Thank you. A swarm. We have a swarm of bees, and you know how they crawl about all over their hive. So this is an adjective which means swarming like bees. So there are lots of these elemental entities, small beings that have some life. Each of them has their own will. This is when we enter into the subconscious. This can happen to us in dreams. I don't think this is the easiest or recommended way to find our inner being. On the next page, when we come to it, Sri Aurobindo will describe the dangers of entering by the subconscious. The way that Sri Aurobindo and Mother have recommended us to follow is to enter through the heart center. But here, because particularly of her mission, that she has to break this way through for human beings, and it is in contrast to the way that King Aswapati's spiritual illumination has been shown in Book 1. So this is another way that it can happen.
Can you say something to incontinent force?
Yes, incontinent, it means without any control. It's not contained, it's not under control. So this is very nice description of what that subconscious world is like. No, everything is there, but nothing is in its place. And it's all swarming around, and all these different entities are following their own way. So it's difficult to find your way through that. Sometimes an opening comes, she manages to force her way through a door. She crosses through these spaces of secret self, of consciousness. She's moving in inner time. And eventually she comes a step forward or a stage forward. Susmita, you would read, please.
At last, she broke into a form of things, the start of finiteness, a world of sense. But all was still confused, nothing self-found. Soul was not there, but only cries of life. A cold and clamorous air environed her. A horde of sounds defied the significance. A dissonant clash of cries and contrary calls. A mob of visions broke across the sight. A jostled sequence lacking sense and suit. Feelings pushed through a packed and burned heart. Each force is separate in consequent way, but cared for nothing but its ego's drive.
Thank you. So there's no order, It's beginning to be form and organization. This is a world of sense, of the senses are predominant. But everything is still confused. Nothing reveals its meaning and significance. Soul was not there, only cries of life. The senses are a manifestation of life. And it's rather stifling, a thronged and clamorous air. A throng is many people together, and they're all making a noise. And it's surrounding her. It might be quite scary and stifling. A horde of sounds, many, many different dissonant sounds, and one can't make sense of any of them. A dissonant clash of cries and contrary calls. They are contradicting each other. A mob of visions broke across the site. One thing after another, one is seeing. He says it's a jostled sequence. They come one after the other, pushing each other, jostling. Each one pushing the others out of the way. But there's no meaning in this sequence. It lacks here in the sense of meaning, and it lacks sweet, it lacks consequence. And in the same way, very confusing feelings and contradictory feelings pushed through a packed and burdened heart. Each of these sensations is forcing its own separate, inconsequent way, and none of them care for anything except just their own small individual will. Perhaps we'll read just one more passage. Sophie?
Providing without key of common will, thoughts stare at thought and pull at the taut rein, as if to cut the reason from its seat and cast its course into life's wayside journey. So might forgotten lie in nature's mouth, huddled on the slain sentinel of the soul. So could life's power shake from his mind's rule, nature renounce the spirit's government, and the air elemental energies make of the sense of glory the boundless joy, a splendor of ecstatic anarchy, a rebel mighty and mad of hot bliss. This was the sense's instinct void of soul. Or when the soul sleeps, hidden void of power. But now the vital Godhead waits within and lifts the light with the supernal touch.
Thank you. There are all these feelings, sensations, feelings, but also thoughts. And the thoughts are so confusing, it is as if they really want to destroy the reason, to pluck the reason from its seat. Throw it away. And the reason is the sentinel of the soul, the protector and guard of the soul. And if the reason gets thrown away, if we allow confusion to prevail, then this sentinel of the soul might lie forgotten in the mud, in the lower levels of nature. There's a somehow in these subconscious levels, there's an urge for the life power to shake off the rule of mind, the control of mind. In this way, nature could renounce the government of the spirit, and these bare elemental energies, these primitive energies, could just indulge the senses, making of the sense a glory of boundless joy, a splendor of ecstatic anarchy, a revel mighty and mad of utter bliss. He says this is the instinct of the senses, to be free, to enjoy to the utmost without any restraint or control, especially when the life Godhead, the life spirit, wakes up within and gives this touch of intensity and hints of bliss. But in the next sentence he says, but how shall come the glory and the flame if mind is cast away into the abyss? or body without mind has not the light, the rapture of spirit sense, the joy of life. All then becomes subconscient, tenebrous, shadowy. Inconscience puts its sail on nature's page. So even the senses can't enjoy. Or else a mad disorder whirls the brain, posting along a ravaged nature's road, a chaos of disordered impulses in which no light can come, no joy, no peace. And Savitri feels this state threatening her. She has to resist that. That is the next stage, which we'll read about next time. There's a painting of this elemental energies here. Pause it and then get the play.
To Sherbin.